First, you'd breathe deeply a few times, and then you scan through your body for tension, see if you can relax anything. The third thing to do at the beginning is to take a few moments or minutes to have a global awareness of your body. Take some time just to feel your whole body as much as you can. It might not be all at once, but just let your awareness roam around your body, take in your body, feel your body. So you have some sense of presence here in this body. And then within the body, as part of the body, become aware of how the body experiences breathing. And what's the strongest or most pronounced way that your body experiences breathing, that your body knows that you're breathing in, breathing out, inhaling, exhaling? You might feel the breathing mostly in your chest. You might feel it in your belly, the movement there. You might feel it more mostly as the air goes in and out through your nostrils and into the back of your mouth and throat. And to the degree that you can become aware of your breathing, notice how the experience, how the body experiences inhalations, is a different experience than the experience of exhalations. If you have trouble feeling your breathing, you could try putting your hand on your belly or your chest so you feel the movement there. And then as you feel your breathing, as you experience the body breathing, try to hang in there and stay with as many breaths in a row as you can. Without straining or pushing, hang in there for breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out. And if the mind wanders away from the breath, as soon as you notice that it's wandered away, begin again with your breathing. Feel it carefully, and then try to hang in there for as many breaths. most important movements here is coming back to the breathing when you're lost. It's natural for the mind to wander off from the breath, but the practice is to come back again and then try to hang in there, stay with the breath. And there's a little trick you could use to help you stay with more breath, stay more concentrated on the breath. And that is a very, very quiet whisper in the mind. Say to yourself, in as you breathe in, and out as you breathe out. Or if you feel the chest or belly rising and falling, say rising, falling. So you're using a very rudimentary thinking part of your mind to encourage you to stay there, right there with the breath, each breath. We'll stay for one more minute. That last minute, stay as completely and continuously as you can with your breath. See if you cannot lose one breath for the next minute. So, mindfulness is a noticing practice. Noticing what is happening. So if you sit down and start following your breath, what do you notice? Some of you probably noticed how difficult it is to stay with your breath. Is that right? You noticed that? Mm-hmm. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. You succeeded in paying attention. Isn't that great? Probably one or two of you thought, I'm not doing it right, I can't stay on the breath. The point is not to stay on the breath so much as it is to notice. And so if you notice, it's sometimes said that the first success in meditation is to realize, to know that the mind is out of control. So some of you have attain the first degree of success, that the mind is out of control. We say in Buddhism, if you have a mind that's out of control, it's much better to know it than to have a mind that's out of control and not to know it. So as you begin focusing on the breath, trying to stay with your breath, don't be discouraged by how difficult it might be. You're beginning to notice what's going on. Some days you'll find yourself very busy and agitated about something, and because you're trying to sit still and be present, you'll notice that the agitation much more fully than you would in other days. Other days you sit down to meditate and you're really calm and relaxed and present, and you notice that, what that's like. It's a noticing practice. Noticing is more important than getting concentrated. So we notice what's going on. And then as we notice things in this practice, one of the real key things, whatever we notice, can we be at ease about what we notice? Can we try not to be in conflict with what we notice? So we sit here and we try to stay with the breath and the mind wanders off. So we notice that, the mind wanders off. It's pretty common for people to say, oh shoot, or some equivalent of that. Or, you know, I can't do that. I'm an embarrassment to the world of meditation. And, you know, I shouldn't be doing this. And, you know, all these ideas build up, you know. All those, reactions to it. We try to notice what's happening. And then in the context of meditation, be content. That's enough to notice. You don't have to judge it or criticize or be in conflict with what goes on. So you notice the mind has wandered off, and then for now, just come back again to the breath. Very simply, matter-of-factly, kindly. One teacher I know, she said, smilingly. Just come back to your breathing. Begin again with your breath. And be content you notice that the mind wandered away. Be content you notice a little bit what it was like. And then come back. One of the very important first qualities, inner qualities, or lessons that come with meditation practice is learning to be patient. Meditation does not belong, the spiritual life I would say, not just meditation, but the spiritual life does not belong to the chronological reality or unreality of computer worlds, of technology world, of this world that we're living in. Everybody's people are multitasking and doing so many different things. And, you know, someone a couple of years ago was given a DSL here at the center of my office. And at first it was great. Things are so fast. But now I've gotten used to it. And it's not fast enough. So meditation does not belong to the world of efficiency. That's, I'm going to find the most efficient meditation. There's something the inner spiritual part of our psyche, of our life, of our being. I would say is quite shy. And it needs a lot of space and time to show itself. It needs a lot of settling of a lot of different things before something beautiful can really bubble up inside of you. So patience is a really important quality. Give it time. Don't be in a hurry. Give it time in any one meditation session, and give it time over months and even years sometimes of doing meditation practice. If you're sitting in meditation and at the 10 minutes you look at your watch and say, have I gotten to the first samadhi yet? You know, that's like the farmer who plants her corn and then wants to know where the corn is growing, so pulls the corn seedling out of the ground to see. Well, that's, you know, you can find out how much it's grown, but then you've killed the corn seedling. Don't be caught up in, you know, having to measure and hurry, and give yourself lots of time for things to settle, to unfold, to move through you. So what was it like, some of you? Some of you have any questions or comments about that little meditation we did? Big meditation? Please.
If we want to continue practice through the week until next week, do you have a recommended duration?
Yes, I was going to do that before the end. So I'll do it now since you ask. What I'd like to recommend, for the first four of the 5 weeks, I'll pass out a handout. And there's somewhere out there on a chair, there's a handout. And I don't know if there's enough for everybody. I apologize, we don't have enough. But that handout does also appear on our website. Where on the website?
There's a section for beginning meditation.
Section for beginning meditation.
And there are PDFs for each day for the handouts.
Right. So if it's really easy for you to download it off the computer, then you might get it there rather than pick it up here, and let the people who computers are a little bit of a foreign world, let them pick up the hard copy if we don't have enough. But there I'll give some of this instruction will be there. But my suggestion, if you're new to all this, is for the first week, meditate for 15 minutes a day. And then each week of the class, add 5 minutes. So you're building over time. And do it every day. And if your life allows for it, it's best if you can choose the same time and same place every day for that. That shy part of our psyche, that kind of the meditative world, seems to unfold better when there's continuity and consistency and regularity. And so, like one thing that's nice to do is to find a little corner of your home that maybe can be your designated meditation spot, sometimes a corner of a bedroom, where not much else goes on in that spot. So when you go sit there, the associations to the spot is meditation. It's not like other associations that might pull you this way and that. And so, and then have try to figure out a time during your day when you're most likely to actually do it every day. Many people find it very nice to meditate first thing in the morning, or relatively first thing in the morning. The day is kind of quiet still, the business hasn't built up, some of the tensions of the day, from the day before have dissipated through sleep, and you're less likely to get phone calls and be disturbed. So do it first thing when you get up, or after having something to drink or something. But some people, you know, not morning people, or some people doesn't work that way. If you have kids, maybe it doesn't work that way. And so some people like to do it before they go to sleep, some people like to do it at the end of the day. Some people will take 15 minutes or 20 minutes during the lunch break at work. My wife used to meditate. She had a little meditation group at her company where she worked at, and they had this supply closet they'd go into. And they were, I guess it was big enough for 3 or 4 people, and they'd go in the supply closet and they're left alone and they meditated there. So you have to figure out what works for you, what makes sense. And if you can't do regularity, then just do it every day, but just each day can be a different time. It's best when you meditate to have loose clothes, so that you don't have constricted in any kind of way. One of the questions people ask is, how do I know when 15 minutes is up? You don't want to be looking every 5 minutes at your watch. That doesn't help very much. It's best to have some kind of timer. And, you know, it can be any kind of timer that kind of, you know, works for you. I used to have an alarm clock, an old-fashioned alarm clock. I would set it to go off at a certain time, the alarm to go off. But I would set it so it would go off at 7 o'clock or 6 o'clock or something. But then I wouldn't turn the alarm on. And then when the hands came around to that time, the clock wouldn't ring because the alarm wasn't on, but it would click. Then I'd hear the click and, okay, end of my sitting. It was a very gentle way of ending the sitting. There's also meditation timers that some people get, various kinds of ways. I think there are some websites that there are meditation timers on the website you can just download on your computer. Some people, in the old days, I guess people don't do this anymore, but like, maybe people don't do cassette tapes anymore, do they? In the old days when we had the cassette tapes. You know, you can record on a CD. You can record 15 minutes of silence. And at the end of 15 minutes, you can ring a bell. And then when you're ready to meditate, you turn on your CD player or your computer and put your CD in, and off it goes. And you sit there quietly, and after 15 minutes, ding, ding. So. Any other questions or comments? Yes?
I actually created a series of different time lengths of silences and three bells. So if people want, they can email me.
Oh, great. Great. What's your name?
Conrad.
Conrad. So Conrad has made a series of time tapes.
It's from 5 to 10 to 15 to a half hour to 45, the longest.
Great. Program. So if you want, he'll email you silence. Silence in an attachment. What else? What was the meditation experience like for some of you? Anybody want to share any questions about it? Or yes, please.
Very difficult.
Mm-hmm. What is it that's hard in particular with your knees, or is it energetically different?
Just after a while, I assume it just maybe goes numb. But I mean, that I was more aware of my discomfort in just sitting for a period of time, and I wasn't progressing.
It could be.
And I assume that passes as well.
Generally, there's a lot of discomfort for people who just begin meditation. The body's not used to being this kind of posture. People have all kinds of ways of being in daily life which are often not very relaxed with their body and tense in different ways, and just sit and start relaxing the places of tension and sit up. There's a lot of adjustment the body has to go through, and so it's best to be patient with those adjustments. It's really worthwhile. One of the paradoxes of meditation practice, it is relaxing the practice, but sometimes the surface muscles relax first and relatively easily. But then some of the deeper held tensions revealed themselves. And as long as the surface was tense, the deeper stuff was kind of numb. But when the surface relaxes, the deeper stuff shows itself, and sometimes it hurts. And it's like, wow, this meditation, I'm going backwards, I'm getting more tense through meditation. But you're not getting more tense, just the deeper tensions are showing themselves finally. And as I said, if you're going to be tense, it's better to know you're tense than not know. So the more we know things, the better we say it is in Buddhism. Where we see what clearly is. Often people's legs will go asleep. Sometimes energetically their adjustments have to be made. Sometimes people sometimes depend on constantly moving as a way of discharging or dealing with inner psychic states, psychological states, and anxieties or fears or all kinds of restlessness or whatever. And if you sit still and don't have that avenue of always moving to kind of deal with it, then you have to deal with it through awareness. It's a whole different game. It's actually more profound, more useful. But it takes some doing.
My legs keep going numb. So a lot of times if I'm trying to meditate, I have to keep shifting my legs one in front of the other. Do the stools or the little
benches?
It
all depends on the person. So you might experiment a little bit and see. For new meditators, it's pretty common for legs fall asleep. It's usually the blood circulation, which is somehow being cut. And usually over time, after a few, sometimes days, weeks, or a few months, the blood finds different routes, seemingly, or it seems to work itself out, and it stops, you know, stops falling asleep. One thing about falling asleep, if the sensations in your feet and legs come back within 2-3 minutes, then it's an issue with the blood. But if it takes more than 5 minutes for your sensation to come back, then you've been pinching a nerve. It's pretty rare, but it does happen sometimes. And so if it takes more than 5 minutes to get sensation back, never sit that way again. Be very careful. You never want to pinch a nerve. If you're not in terrible pain and you're confident it's blood, which it probably is, it's okay to sit with numb legs. You don't have to, because a numb doesn't mean you have to switch. You can maybe sometimes just let it be and just be very, don't stand up quickly. You can experiment, certainly the bench, but there can be a variety of different little changes you can do in your sitting that might help. You might try sitting higher, you might try sitting lower, you might try changing where the weight is on your butt. Some people will get these half moon cushions like I have, which spreads the weight more evenly. That works well for some people. Some people will take a get like a some kind of pillow that's you know, has a 90 degree angle in it, and then like a wedge, and then put it in, sit on the corner of it, in the wedge of it, so that most of the weight is right there between the sitting bones and the tailbone or something, so that there's no pressure at all kind of on the outside of the butt and down the thighs, because it's hanging more, so nothing's pressing there. Sometimes it has to do with legs falling, so it has to do with the back not being just quite right. Sometimes it has to do with the fact that your ankle is curved a little bit. You're not used to having your ankle this way. Sometimes you get a small sock and roll it up and put it underneath your ankle like this, so you have a little more of a normal curve on your ankle. That can make the blood go a little easier. So a lot of little experiments. Sometimes just simply moving the knees closer together or knees further apart can make a difference. So, but patience is really the key. Just wait, and it tends to work itself out.
What about the outside noise?
Oh, until next week, you're supposed to just ignore it. And because this week, we're just doing breath. And so if something takes you away, like the noises, just kind of come back and come back and come back and ignore it, and you know, maybe you have to have a little bit more oomph with staying with the breath so you don't get pulled away. And the breath is a really important foundation for this. And the more you become familiar with your breath, you get to know it, the more you kind of enter the world of your breath, the easier the rest of the meditation will be. So next week we'll talk about sounds some.
I need to meditate a lot more, and as I got to where I could meditate longer and longer and longer, and then some of my legs would get sleepy. But after a while, I would just not feel them anymore. Like my entire, like it was almost like as if my body was cut in half. I had no sensation.
Were you numb?
Not even numb. Just like it wasn't even, like I just wasn't experiencing any sensation at all. No, like,
what happened at the end of the sitting?
I had to spend a lot of time just kind of like leaning forward and just kind of waiting for it to kind of wake back up and sort of like get up really, really slowly.
More than 5 minutes?
Hard to say. Maybe.
So maybe it's not. Maybe you shouldn't do that then.
So maybe it's just I think it might have been a nerve thing. Because I thought maybe it was just like some sort of weird state that I was in.
This is what they mean by flying in meditation. Right?
Yeah, it's interesting. The reason I brought it up is because before you said that you should be aware of your whole body, and that was like a time when I clearly wasn't aware of my whole body. So just should you maintain that awareness of your whole body?
And that's not necessarily, but so it's hard to know. A number of things could be going on for you. I don't know what's going on, and maybe some other time we can talk more about it. Mm-hmm. But for the time being, I think to be on the safe side, maybe you shouldn't sit in such a way that this lower half of the body goes numb. If it takes that long, at the end of it, to kind of get it back, and then let's see how it goes in the course of these weeks, and then I can explore it some more. Okay. Oh yeah, another question? One more. Last one.
I'm sitting here trying to figure out how to say this. When I pay attention to my breath, I find it as an aesthetically meager experience. And so I'm an artist, so my mind wants to make it an aesthetically pleasing experience. So I want to give it color or radiance or something.
Uh-huh.
And something. So then I feel a bit of conflict, like, is that my mind helping me, or is that my mind getting in my way?
It could be both at the same time. But I would, I'm glad you're noticing. You're noticing something. You notice your mind has this tendency to engage and try to make an aesthetic experience. As long as you're trying to always to change your experience to have a better experience, you're not really free. So what we're trying to do here is to learn how to be free in the midst of things as they actually are. And if they're not so interesting, then learn how to be luminously free with an uninteresting phenomenon.
I guess the reason I was sort of thinking about it and wanted to ask you about it, my interpretation of it as an aesthetically meager experience is also my mind.
It's an interpretation.
So I think, okay, I have a choice here. I can be here with aesthetically meager experience, or maybe I don't have to. Maybe I am free to choose whatever kind of experience.
You are, sure. You're always free like that. But there's a lot to say there. What we're trying to do here is cultivate an ability to be present with what is, without needing to interpret it differently, without being reacting to it, without pushing it away, without holding on to it, but be fully and clearly present for what is. And in doing that, it's discovering how to be free in the midst of what is. A lot of times in life, we seemingly do have choice to make things better or more aesthetic or whatever. Someday will come in your life where you don't no longer have a choice. And if you're not prepared for that moment, you're in trouble. So this is preparation. And the deeper, shyer aspects of the psyche will only show themselves when you stop trying to manipulate your life, your experience. When you stop trying to make a better experience. And to offer you a carrot, the most aesthetically beautiful experiences in life come when we stop trying to make anything happen. And I've been doing this breath meditation for 30 years, and I find it more and more and more interesting. I find it's one of the most beautiful and phenomenal things to do as human life is to be attentive to the breath. It's just great. And I think that people who never followed their breath before, that's a strange idea. But the breath is one of the most amazing things. And some of you probably know that, you know, one of the ways we say breathing in English is a respiration, right? The word spire and respire is the same word as spirit. And when you say the word, because the word in Latin for breath is spirit, spiritus or something like that. It's a spirit. When you say the word spiritual, you have the breath in the word. You say the word spirit, the expression spiritual inspiration, it's breath in both words. The breath is very closely linked in almost all major religious traditions I know with the spiritual life, the inner life. So I would not underestimate the phenomenal world, universe of the breath. And if the breath seems like cardboard or mundane or, you know, nothing at all at first, be patient. Just be patient. Stay with it. So the first week is then mostly staying with the breath, cultivating awareness of the breath. And one of the very interesting things to do with the breath is in your daily life, as you go about driving or having some conflict at work or at home, or if you're, you know, when you have, you know, different situations in life, notice what your breathing is like. And what you'll find is your breathing changes depending on what you're doing and how you're feeling about it. I want to do a little exercise with you. Well, we have 5 minutes left. It's very, very brief. Put your hand on just both an area in the stomach where your diaphragm is. And you might want to close your eyes just a moment and just feel the movement. Relax your belly and let it be soft. Let your belly kind of move into your hand. And then see if you can feel the movement there in your diaphragm and your belly as your stomach, your diaphragm, your belly goes up and down. Relaxed breathing. Helps if you sit up straight for this. Stomach relaxed. And now open your eyes and stare at some point in front of you. Really fixate your eyes and stare really hard, really going to penetrate like a laser into that point in front of you. And as you do that, notice how that changes your breathing. And now, keeping your eyes open, relax your gaze so you take in the peripheral vision. Take in the widest possible gaze of the room, broad, relaxed, open, not fixated. Breathe. And notice, does that change what happens in your belly, your diaphragm? Okay. Everybody's different. Everybody has a different experience. But there's a fairly high number of people who find that when they fixate and stare their eyes, they pull in and tighten in the diaphragm area. And when they kind of relax their gaze, it becomes soft again here in the belly. And that's normal, it's natural. However, many of us get fixated on things that we don't need to be fixated on. We get mental preoccupations, things we're really concerned about and anxious about, and the mind stays there and is locked on there. The cost on that, to doing that, is that it affects our breathing. We tighten up in various kinds of ways. So if you pay attention to your breath during daily life as you go through, you learn a lot about yourself. You learn about the way a lot of it, how you hold things. And if you notice that your breath is being held, and then if you can relax it in daily life, you'll probably find that it's hard to hold on to some of the things you're holding on to. And then you'll wonder, maybe I don't want to let go of them. Maybe you do. So pay attention to your breath. It's really a great world. And I think that's it. There's a handouts there. And the way some of you might be new to IMC, I'd like to say that welcome to our center. Our center is, I like to think of our center as being an informal place where people can come informally, come whenever they kind of easily come and go, come easily, leave when you want to go, be part of our community if you want, don't be part if you don't want to come, just, it's very informal. But you're welcome to be, here. Everything that we do here at our center, we offer freely, and we have no cost, no charge for it. However, the expenses of the center and my salary all come from the donations that people leave behind. So if you're inspired to support what happens here, then the way the work system here is there's two there's a box with two slots. One slot is for the teacher, and the other slot is for the running of the center. Thank you.